Welcome to Spark TO. Meet the speakers who are sparking conversation at Spark the Change Toronto. Everybody, and welcome to Spark the Change Toronto. We still haven't come up with a catchy name, but perhaps with our guest today, Ryan will help me figure out a new name. Right, Ryan?
I'll do my best.
So Ryan Burwell is part of the 21 Toys Company, and we were just chit-chatting how we're going to introduce. So I'm going to do one thing, and then Ryan's going to talk about himself because he's a very complicated man. He has catalytic moments that we need to discuss.
That's the illusion that I try to cultivate, is one of complexity anyway. So thanks for playing along.
You're welcome. You're welcome. There's a neat little thing online, and it's something like, aren't you a sweet little lollipop of psycho triple dipped in something? And I'm like, I like that. So on the 21 Toys website, it says, our learning revolution. 21 Toys is the product of a revolution. You could say this revolution has been happening since the 1800s, or you could say it's early days still. You'd be right on both counts. Our revolution, the one we go to work for every day, is a learning revolution. Our revolution demands answers. What are creativity, play, teamwork, and empathy in our classrooms, our boardrooms, or the public square? More importantly, how do we teach these critical skills? Which brings us to Ryan as our returning speaker at Spark the Change Toronto.
I'm excited to be back.
Yay! So I'm now going to give the mic to you to tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll jump into the Spark details.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm the director of training facilitation here at 21 Toys, and I've had the pleasure. I would like to think so. Thank you for saying so. You're already pumping my tires. Oh, great, Elizabeth. So I do appreciate it. I've been part of this company. We're now just about 6 years old, right from the get-go. And we are very much part of this revolution that has been going on arguably since the time of Friedrich Froebel, when he first created the idea of a play-based educational experience that became what's called kindergarten now.
That's where I know the name from. I know that.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason why we say that it's both old and it's new is that, right from the early days of Froebel, he knew intuitively what everyone who's ever talked to a four-year-old knows, is that human beings are designed from their very earliest days to be able to learn through experience and learn from play.
Experimentation.
That's exactly it. And that type of creativity, like you give a four-year-old a stick and it's not a stick, it's a magic wand that transforms their surroundings into something much, much greater than them. But what ended up happening after Froebel is that, of course, the Industrial Revolution comes along, and the idea of efficiency becomes sort of the focus in all things in society, including
the birth of the 40-hour work week.
Exactly, and the school system and the way that we actually start doing training in general starts to follow that very sort of segmented, disciplined approach that is at odds with the way that we tend to think. So it's this revolution of using play, which is what 21 Toys is all about as an educational company, is starting to see this resurgence again, where people are starting to recognize that in order to be able to train the innovators for the 21st century, we need to be able to speak to people's natural sense of curiosity and the way that our brains actually learn new things, which is by engaging with them, by having fun with them, and through play. And that's why
tapping into their inner four-year-old.
Oh, exactly. Because ultimately, a four-year-old, in addition to being able to conjure imaginary worlds, they're also people that by their very nature are constantly asking why. And if we're going to be able to...
So much trouble for them.
Oh, for sure. We've all been stuck in those conversations with four-year-olds, that sort of the infinite regress of like, why? That's actually one of the most important questions we can ask right now in a time of tremendous change. So the revolution that we're proposing now, and that I'm very excited to be part of as Director of Training and Facilitation 21 Toys, is bringing that approach to the world of work as well, because the future of work demands that type of curiosity, demands that type of humanity, that is going to allow us to be able to navigate the changes of the 21st century.
Which leads us into, so thank you very much. And we were fortunate to have Ryan last year. We did Spark at ROM. And this year we have moved back to our wonderful home at the Science Center. Very excited. We just went for another site visit on Tuesday. and just got a whole ton of new ideas and new ways to deliver. And so Ryan's part of a new thing that we're trying this year, which is very exciting, and it's called the Epic Game Event. And it hasn't been finalized, but what I can tell you is that on the second day at around 1:45, Ryan's going to take the stage and he's going to deliver this fantastic talk called The Future of Work, Empathy, Failure, and Play at Work, which was similar to what I think that you, I think I had to jump in and out last year, so I didn't get to see your entire thing, but I remember having the table up front and you had one person trying to direct the other person on how to create the toy while the other person was blindfolded, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So just like last year, we're going to be taking people through the empathy toy. So the empathy toy is a collaborative puzzle that can only be solved when all the players clearly understand each other. It's an abstract wooden puzzle that is designed to be deliberately difficult to describe and deliberately difficult to assemble. And through a series of...
It was hysterical to watch. I got to
It is hilarious to both watch and play, but that hilarity also balances with the inherent frustrations of trying to do something that is like that is designed to be deliberately difficult to be able to explain. Yeah. And the purpose of the activity and all the different ways that you can play the game is to be able to gain insight into how do we actually need to be able to modify the communication that we use based on the person that I'm trying to solve an abstract challenge with. How do I provide support unique to that person while they're going through something that's very frustrating? What are some of the innovative problem-solving strategies that I need to come to realize with my collaborators based on how the game unfolds? Mm-hmm. So the game itself is this very open-ended experience, which is very much a reflection of the type of open-ended, uncertain experiences that a lot of workplaces are going through right now. The ultimate goal of the game is to have participants be able to make very clear connections between what worked well when trying to solve this particular abstract challenge with the empathy toy,
right,
and how could I apply those same strategies when I go back to work in order to become a more understanding communicator, collaborator, and problem solver. So I'm
it's
excited
interesting
to
take that you. So the work, I find the workplace fascinating, and I have an odd perspective. So, I mean, and I promise you this ties in. Remember what I said at the beginning, that it'll seem to go off and then it'll come back. I promise you this will come back.
I'm a big fan of tangents. So tangent away.
So you can manage my tangents. Like, and I mean, not the way we discussed, but similar to. So quite a few years ago now, my son was in public school and transitioning from grade 6 to his next step because his school stopped at grade 6. And so my son has Asperger's syndrome. He's dyslexic. He's ADD. He's like the perfect genetic storm of not great in the classroom. Mm. And we were having real challenges around him navigating and communicating with 24 other people every day. And so every day he'd walk in and he was so focused on trying to navigate. He also has hyperacuity, which means his hearing is off the charts. Mm. So combine hyperacuity with ADD and you have a social issue. He's very low impact with autism. So he's very sociable, very empathetic, all of those things, but it's just enough to kind of go, that's fun. Mm. And we decided to try and put him in self-contained class, which meant maximum of 15 students, one teacher and an EA dedicated to the class. And after jumping through the numerous hoops that most school boards put you through to do an exceptional thing, they brought me in front of this panel and I had to defend my request. This was hardcore. So the principal spoke, the special resources person spoke, and they turned to me and I'm like, Mrs. Plouffe, do you have anything to say? I'm like, you don't know me. So I piped up and I said, do you remember that first day of work? And you walk in, you don't know who to talk to, you don't know how to talk to them, you don't know how to, you know, you got to really monitor the level of engagement in your conversation and what you're saying and who you're saying it to and all of these things that after a while become second nature. You know when you walk into the office that Ted needs two coffees before you chat. Hmm. And you know that Sally's going to give you this amazing, warm, welcoming hello, and maybe you're not a morning person, so maybe you just understand that that's what Sally's got to do. That's her way of connecting with you. Hmm. Yada, yada, yada. But after a while, becomes second nature. I said, that first day is my son's life every day. Mm-hmm. Every day he has to relearn how that person communicates. Every day he has to relearn how to navigate that social relationship. Every day he has to take all of this and redevelop it every day. Mm-hmm. And so I think what you're doing with the empathy toy, I think there is a marked lack of focus on communication because people are not playing with wooden puzzles. They're sticking their noses on these things and they lose that ability when it's required to engage in meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
And they're so focused on their agenda, not in a malicious way, but they're just so focused on what they want to accomplish that they kind of forget to actually pay attention to the body language, engage in reciprocal conversation versus agenda driven, and then communicate effectively so that you can achieve the goal.
Oh, for sure. And to your point, yes, and we're back. All right, good. Well, and to your point, both with your son's experience and the sort of the experience in the workplace, one of the things that we really try to emphasize when we're leading sessions with the toy, either with a workplace environment, and we also work with schools as well, is we really want to emphasize the fact that this, the art of learning about others, like, you know, I know that one colleague needs two cups of coffee before I say hello. That type of gathering of data, and then using that data about what I know about the people that I interact with, is actually really at the crux of what we call empathy. Like, one of the things that we're trying to get people to understand is that this important thing called empathy is not an abstract, intangible, fuzzy skill. It's actually a skill that has a lot of a data-driven components to it. You can teach someone to gather that information that's necessary to have meaningful engagements with those around them, whether they be their peers in a classroom, colleagues in the boardroom. The process is very similar about gathering and using information to help us work together more effectively.
See, Jason and I laugh because we both have very small empathy buttons. And I am the first, if somebody's in trouble and legitimately in trouble, and my husband will tell you, I'm the first person to go, how can I help you? Mm-hmm. But if you're full of poo and you're trying to rook somebody, I'd be the first one to go, you know what you can do? It rhymes with duck. And people are like, Elizabeth, you need to put your filter on. I'm like, no, they need to stop bullshitting.
Yeah, and I think understanding that we all sort of respond to those things in a very different way. Like, you would respond to those things in a very different way than some of your colleagues and some of the people you work with, and having a clear understanding about like why it is that we respond differently to different situations is part of that, like building up that repertoire of data, of knowledge, of how to work effectively with each other that allows us to be able to communicate more effectively, collaborate more effectively, and solve problems together more effectively.
I do try. I mean, I just, it depends on the person. So when Ryan and I were chatting before, so there's another website to visit, which is theempathytoy.com or empathytoy.com. And I'm just going to flip down here for a second. And this is really cool. So the Empathy Toy is an award-winning blindfolded puzzle game originally designed with the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, super cool, to bridge the communication gap between visually impaired students and their sighted classmates. It has since been turned into a learning tool designed for students of almost any ability and age range from K to 12, as well as a facilitation tool for workplaces of every shape and size. And who better to learn from than somebody who's missing a communication tool? I mean, the eyes say it for a lot of people, right? You use your eyes to gather so much data. You're checking for body posture, you're checking for facial changes, you're checking for all kinds of things that influence how you either are reactive or proactive within the conversation. And when that's missing, you then definitely need to learn to develop other ways
to
gather the data.
Yeah, and the reason that the toy has grown from something that was originally designed with a very sort of a niche market, which was that the sight impaired community, and the reason that it's a cool website. I'm glad everyone should check out our website.
Yes, they should.
Nice.
There's shameless plug.
Yeah, absolutely. But the reason that the use case for the empathy toy grew so broad from that very niche audience that you mentioned to now boardrooms in 45 different countries around the world is because we found the fact that there's a very shared experience around the type of communication that we have to get really good at that happens without sight. Like in boardrooms, of course, like a lot of the actual communication is taking place through email or is taking place through conference calls where we're trying to convey very complex ideas without the benefit of all the visual cues that are actually such a critical part of how our brains think about communication.
Yeah. And so, then we put our own story on that email and our own story on what we think that means.
Yeah, for sure.
I just finished reading Richard Branson's Like a Virgin. What They Don't Teach You in Business School. And one of the things he talks about is that reliance on email or some kind of impersonal technical communication tool is the worst thing that you can do as a leader or, you know, whatever your role is within the company, because of exactly what you're saying. You lose that ability to, somebody might be typing what you think is a really nice reply, but they look like this while they're typing it, and they've had to edit it 6 times to take out the F-bombs.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So you think they're on board, you think they're playing the game, and the meanwhile, they're working everything they can against whatever you want to accomplish because you didn't have that face-to-face conversation.
Yeah, for sure. And like in that particular situation, and in lots of communication situations, especially when communication is happening very quickly, you're absolutely right that people tend to impose a narrative on the communication that they receive. So it's less about the information that I'm reading on my email or that I'm hearing in that offhand remark from my colleague that, that's driving my understanding. It's my assumptions in my head about what I think that person really means by that.
You referenced Brené Brown on the 21 Toys website.
Oh yeah, big fans.
Huge. Yeah, oh, I love her. I just think she's the bee's knees.
Yeah, I know for sure. So we definitely like thought leaders like Brené Brown definitely inspire us to be able to really help people understand the fact that things like empathy, while again, are often thought of as like these abstract skills, like or a sign of weakness, or like, again, like all these narratives that people impose on the idea of empathy. Mm-hmm. But people like Brown point out that, again, there's some very tangible things that we can do to be able to practice empathic listening. One of the things that Brené Brown likes to be able to talk about, she quotes Teresa Wiseman, who's a nursing scholar, and points out that one of the things that people tend to do when they first receive communication is immediately judge that communication, where I'm basically comparing what I've now heard from that person based on my schema in my head about here's what I would do in that situation. Mm-hmm. And that provides a major wedge between the understanding of those two people playing or two people engaging in this communication, and being able to identify quickly the fact that maybe I have interpreted that piece of communication through my own assumptions rather than from their perspective. That leads to miscommunication in the workforce. That leads to projects that end up going off in different directions because we all have these judgmental, assumptions that we're taking based on this, how we've interpreted the communication from our lens rather from the perspective of the person that's actually telling us that.
See, now my immediate response when you said that it drives a wedge is, to me, sometimes it could also build a bridge, because if you are looking at something differently, that person may not have ever considered that that's how their communication would be received. So I think it all dependent on how you deliver your reaction. So you could choose to make it a wedge and say, hey, you piece of so-and-so, why did you do that? Or you could go, hey, now, did they actually mean this and da da da, and go back and say, so is this what you actually meant? Is this what you're trying to tell?
For sure. And turning that potential wedge into an opportunity to learn from a different perspective is actually part of the process that we train facilitators in. And when we run workshops, which is a huge part of what we do, we're trying to train people to get accustomed to the idea that after each interaction, whether it's playing with the empathy toy or having an exchange with a colleague, there needs to be a moment that's set aside to debrief and reflect on the nature of what happened in that communication. Because if I've actually discovered that there was an assumption that got made or some miscommunication or something that was just went off in an unexpected direction, by asking why, by again putting on our four-year-old thinking, why did that happen? And then using our exploration of that why to be able to inform the next time I interact with that person, that's that process of building that empathic understanding that is so important for clear communication, collaboration, and problem solving.
And for those of you who are in a corporate organization and are listening to this, and you start to groan thinking about the amount of time that this could take, and are we all singing Kumbaya and getting all touchy-feely, it's as quick as, hey, so this is what I got out of the meeting. This is the direction I think it took. Does that jive with what you think too? Yes or no? Yes. Great. See you tomorrow, Joe. No. Uh-huh. All right. What point do we need to collaborate? Because in the end, lack of communication, lack of clear goal setting and achieving and all of those things cost you money.
Yeah, for sure. And to your point, like, and I can definitely speak more to this about this idea of like, how much time do I invest in something like this? Because I've heard that from other people as well. It's like, oh, you know, we don't have time to be able to do this type of reflection.
Yeah.
Try to do with, for sure. And what we're trying to do with the workshops and the training that we deliver to corporate teams all over the world is help them build like these reflexive habits.
Yeah.
I'm not asking them to be like, we need to set aside an hour where we have like a meeting to do that.
How did you feel about that?
Yeah, it becomes a habit of mind. So at the end of our workshops, so we have a 90-minute, 3-hour and full day sessions that we provide different teams. We always end those sessions with a very mm-hmm. clear call out as to what is one habit that you would like to be able to practice for the next 3 weeks after this session. Because it takes about 3 weeks to be able to form a very
21 days,
habit.
People.
And that's very on brand too, right?
Yeah.
I'm glad you picked up on that. but like that's ultimately what the success of the activity looks like. It's like, I've had this experience. I know a little bit about what worked, what didn't, and why when I was trying to solve this puzzle with my colleagues. Now I need to focus on what's one very small thing that I can do in meetings or in future like client calls or whatever the context that I want to practice that would allow me to be able to, again, put into practice a small, maybe it's a listening habit, maybe it's asking a different type of question, something that's actionable, very tangible, that allows me to practice the art and the skill of empathy.
See, I know I have a good habit or a bad habit. I always assume that everybody's at the same level of understanding that I am on any topic.
Yeah.
And I just make that assumption in a positive way. I just assume that you understand whatever I'm saying. And I found out I was at a job for 4.5 years and I have a healthcare background. So I have 10 years active as a medical office administrator. And then I was an instructor for 2 years. So I taught anatomy, physiology, pharmacology, all of those things. So when we start talking about health issues, I automatically go into, you know, hysterosalpingoophorectomy for a hysterectomy. And it's in no way meant as an anything. I'm not trying to be a smarty pants or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's my default language for that conversation.
Yeah, for sure.
It took a year and a half for a colleague to let me know that when I did that, she didn't understand a word I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, why did you wait a year and a half to tell?
Because it's uncomfortable. Those types of conversations can be very challenging.
Oh, no,
especially,
I did get that. I was opening the door to say, I would never judge. If you don't understand what I'm saying, that's my fault, not yours.
Yep.
So now I always, if I'm explaining something to somebody and I'm not sure of their background, I'll say to them, does that make sense? And I'm saying that not because I don't think you can understand, but I want to make sure that I'm communicating effectively in language that works for wherever you're at.
Well, for sure. And a nice thing about using play to be able to help build that habit of mind, like that one of the behaviors that came out of that example that you just gave is if that person had felt more comfortable, maybe bringing that up earlier on, saying it's like, listen, that's not really working. What's nice about playing with the empathy toy is like when you're trying to solve the puzzle, you have to be very candid with that person and you see the results of that candor where like that instruction did not work for me. The pieces are not fitting. What we want to be able to do with the game is then use that very tangible game experience
as a
reference point when we're communicating in the future. Like, remember what happened in the game when I didn't speak up and tell my colleague that the language they were using was going right over my head? So now I've had something safe and tangible to be able to test out a particular behavior that then I want to be able to extrapolate from and apply in other situations with my colleagues.
I don't know that I'm going to whip out a toy the next time.
Oh, why not? I know where to get some if you're interested.
We're going to get to that. Shameless.
That's shameless.
Well done. And I actually posted some pictures on Instagram. So my office is filled with little friends like this. And posted some pictures on Instagram and a friend of my husband said, I can't bring my son over because Gage would just never leave your office and he'd want to take the toys home. And I said, well, it's a good thing I can share and I replace them. So if Gage wants to go and have a hoo-ha, he can, you know, I don't care. So one of the cool things that we quickly touched on before we began was the fact that the failure toy, which is what you are bringing to Spark, correct?
We're still bringing the empathy toy.
That's right. So it's June 21st.
We're about to launch the failure toy, which has been in development for actually a number of years now. And it wouldn't make sense if we got the failure toy right on the first kick of the can. Anyway, so yeah.
How many patents did Edison have?
One of my favorite Edison quotes is, of course, the only way that he invented the empathy toy. Yeah, he wishes he invented the empathy toy.
You didn't invent anything important.
That's right. And the only way that he got to the light bulb was he found out 1,000 ways that the light bulb didn't work.
Exactly. So June 21st, the failure toy arrives, and you're going to be able to offer workshops to organizations. Yes.
So what
around
happens
the use of that?
Yeah, what happens on June 21st is we'll be actually leading our first prototype workshop with one of our clients with the actual failure toy. And then based on, and again, we're very much big believers in practicing what we teach. So the idea is to be able to run workshops and gather data about some of the things that work very effectively. But we're also, one of the things we always ask every single one of the teams that we collaborate with is like, what can we do to improve? So that process is going to start in earnest starting June 21st. The themes of failure, however, are going to definitely be a big part of what I bring to Spark. And the idea of empathy and failure, they go together very, very actually handily, because if we're going to help people learn from things that don't work, it's very important to be able to go for exactly that discomfort is only going to be turned into an opportunity when there's clear understanding between the people that are trying something that might not work, so that we know how to support each other through the failures. So I'll be showing people the empathy toy again, but introducing some tantalizing tips and hints about what the failure toy is going to be and how it's going to be a natural partner to the empathy toy.
Well, I'll bring a very quick son story in again. My son is in college this year. He's taking art fundamentals at Sheridan, and he was having some struggles, and we intentionally put him in the full program with no accommodation as far as reducing his course load and whatever, because I didn't want him to think that had to happen. I didn't want us to lower our expectations and him to have nothing to rise to. And so he's had a couple of difficulties, totally cool. And he said something about failing, and we're driving in the car, and I said, okay, tell me how failing feels for you. And he looks at me and he's like, well, it feels bad and scary and whatever. And I said, do you know how amazing it is that you get to feel that way? And he looked at me and he said, what do you mean? And I said, here's what you need to know about failure, Thomas. I said, neither Daddy nor I will ever, ever get really angry with you about failing. I only get angry with you if you don't try. Mm-hmm. And the people that don't try never get to feel the way you feel right now. And I know it doesn't feel great, but imagine going through your whole life and never feeling that way, because you've never stretched yourself. You've never attempted something outside of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And you've decided that failure is something that you're just going to keep over here. Mm-hmm. I said, so the only time I'm going to get angry if you fail is that if you don't then try and fix why you failed. So if you continue to use the same things over and over again, and you ignore the resources that are there for you, and you continue to fail and waste time, then I'm going to get angry, right? And the only thing that you can really, really control about all of this is how you feel about failure. So you can either feel the way you feel right now and understand that that's because you tried and you stretched and you're growing and you're doing these great things, or you can start to fear failure and never go anywhere beyond where you are right now.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And that's what we're so excited, those types of conversations and that type of reframing, the definition of failure. And toys are a really nice way to be able to do that, because there is a degree of safety within that. There's nothing at stake.
Four-year-olds don't really understand what failure is. They just know that they can either break the stick or get a new stick, and I'll see the stick tomorrow.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So the other thing, we're going to wrap up. The final thing that we did quickly chat about was the fact that you have internal facilitation teams that are coming, and you're going to be training educators for the play-based facilitation within organizations, which is terrific. Mm-hmm. If you are attending Spark, I'm sure Ryan will be there to answer any and all questions around how he can come and help your organization with these workshops and training tools that he's got, because who doesn't love being a four-year-old? I mean, seriously, life problems? Overall, pretty little. So we are going to end. If you don't know anything about Spark, and this is the very first time you've ever heard of it, Spark the Change Toronto started in 2015 based on a program launched in England in 2014. And Jason Little is the grand poobah or the great kazoo, whatever you want to call him, who brought the idea to Canada. And I don't know if I introduced myself. I always forget to do that.
You're just so excited to get into these. I think now's the time, though.
You're awesome. So my name's Elizabeth Plouffe. I've been the event coordinator, I guess you could call me, event coordinator and podcast person for Spark. This is my fifth Spark because I just completed Spark the Change India as well. And being a part of this team and being a part of meeting people like Ryan and our other amazing speakers has changed pretty much every aspect of my working life. And I can't even imagine being where I was 4 years ago and not knowing what I know now about how to better communicate and how to better be a part of a, well, Ryan and I talked about the fact that I'm not a good employee. And that a catalyzing moment pushed me to be an entrepreneur, which I've discovered is more my strength. But I am good on teams. I can be a team player, just not for very long. So June 7th and 8th, we will be at the Science Center again this year, which is an incredible facility. We've got some new things coming. Ryan's a part of our Epic Game event. We've got some other surprises that are happening. If you haven't got your ticket, we're actually 85% sold out. So please check the website ASAP. Otherwise you will be SOL for S-P-R-A-K.
I think we got all the acronyms now.
That was pretty lame. Well, Spark doesn't actually stand for anything. So STC. Yeah. So you can visit sparkthechange.ca to find out more about the program and speakers like Ryan. Would love for you to visit the 21 toys, and it's spelled out 21, not the number 21, although I'm sure you own that, Earl, as well. So you can just give it a try. 21toys.ca, because Canadian boy.
Yeah.
And empathytoy.com.
.com, yes. As well, we got folks in 45 different countries that we work with too. So we also have 21toys.com as well. It's just the exact same site though for everyone outside of Canada.
Globetrotting creative thinkers, you fine. And then you can also visit them on Twitter at 21toys and see what they're sending out here. It says, oh, we got to talk about that. Wondering about the future of work. Oh, yeah. It turns out that no matter how much people bemoan an intergenerational office, teams that include millennials, Gen Xers, and baby boomers make better decisions. I have no idea which one of those I am, but I don't care. Yeah. So,
you don't fit neatly into any one box, Elizabeth.
I've heard that before. That's for a variety of reasons. But thank you very, very much, Ryan, for joining me today. So excited to have you back at Spark. See what new things you're going to be doing this year.
Well, thanks. I'm excited to be back, and thanks for having me on the program. And I'm excited to be able to meet some more people at Spark as well. It's an amazing networking opportunity, and there's lots of really delicious brains. Sorry, that sounded kind of zombie-ish. Lots of interesting brains that are going to be in the room, and lots of opportunities to play with some very, very cool people. So I'm excited for it.
We will have great food because we just did our testing on Tuesday, and we have the food dudes this year. Damn.
All right. Sounds like a delicious opportunity all in.
Crazy good. And we do not serve brains. Just going on record right now, this is not a zombie-based conference.
All right, good. We got that
out. It would be cool, though. But, yeah.
Well, maybe next year, Spark 2019.
That gives me ideas. That's so sad. Anyway, thanks again, everybody, for joining us. And we will see you soon. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right. And we're done.
All right.
All right. So what'll happen now? I got a phone call at 2:00. So I kept resetting the timer. Timers hold no meaning for me. So I will download this. It will get uploaded to my SoundCloud channel. And then Laura Goodrich and I spoke on Friday. So we will put Laura's out first and then yours will come out right after that.
Okay.
And I'm going to talk to Jason to getting on the website as part of your profile. And then we'll share those links with you as well. So if you can push those out through your channels.
Yeah, sure thing.
The podcast sits on SoundCloud, iTunes. It's my podcast channel, but I do a Spark component. Mm. But it sits on probably 5 or 6 different platforms. So it gets pretty good reach.
All right, cool.
And then I'll upload the video. You can have a look at it. If you're happy with it, great, we'll use it. And if not, we're good too. It worked out well. So that doing that switch and having the toy behind you, it actually looks very good.
Okay, good. I'm glad the background ended up being a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Product placement. Thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm all about that. All right. Well, again, thank you very much for the opportunity and for the flexibility and rescheduling. So I do appreciate
it. Glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, me too. Me too, for sure.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, Elizabeth. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening, and please visit us at sparkthechangetoronto.ca to learn more, or you can follow us on Twitter at @SparkConfto.